You may have heard of us, but you might not know Bank First is a community bank that has no fee ATM access, interest and perks earning checking accounts. With online and mobile banking, mortgages for every stage of life, and modern business banking for businesses, small and big. We keep it all together to put you first. Do you bank with us? You should. Bank First is an equal housing lender and a member FDIC.
Well, good Monday morning to you. I'm Bart Gregory along with Charlie Winfield, and we're in the Farm Bureau studios here in downtown Starkville. Farm Bureau, go with the home team at Farm Bureau. Agents all across the state of Mississippi. Whether you're looking for home, life, auto, whatever you need in the insurance world, our good friends at Farm Bureau will get you taken care of. And this is Monday coffee. Yesterday, we're out of pocket yesterday. Charlie, good to see you, and a great way to start the week right here in the studios this morning.
Is it?
Yeah.
Okay.
We're turning the page from last week. Does the week end on Sunday or does it begin on Sunday?
Well, mine ended sometime late yesterday. So I considered it over for all intents and purposes.
So it's a new week is what you're saying.
Actually, earlier on Sunday than I had hoped, as a practical matter. But, hey, I figured we were coming in here. You got the green shirt on. Thought maybe you were going to want to talk Masters.
Well, I did turn it over to the Masters a little bit early yesterday, a little bit earlier than I had anticipated doing that.
Are you a Masters fan?
Yes, I am.
I am wondering if I'm changing my views on them. Being somewhat of a populist, I'm starting to think they're a bunch of phonies.
Well, I did notice this yesterday on the CBS broadcast. They're piping in more birds that's artificial. The fake birds on the broadcast. Do you know what I'm talking about?
Oh, yeah.
They're doing a little bit more of that, and it's becoming a little bit too Jim Nancy.
Now, Jim Nance, you talk about a guy that just thrived in that. You know, you've heard the story. Jim Nance has his wine that he makes, The Calling, and he talks about how he likes to walk the course on Sunday night. Just a glass of The Calling.
Well, he did.
Savor the memories.
I will give Jim Nance credit. He did credit Vern Lundquist yesterday. Vern Lundquist yesterday having his last broadcast at 16 in the Tower.
I like Vern.
I like Vern a lot.
It's just when he's paired with Gary Danielson that I'm a little more suspect.
No, I love the Masters. I think it is one of the – it's one of them that holds true. A lot of things that you go to an event and you're like – you left there a little underwhelmed of what your thought process was going to be going into it. I think the Masters exceeds any expectations if you ever go there. I've been to a practice round. I've been to the par three on a Wednesday, and I've been to the final round on a Sunday. I've been three times.
I am told that it is more fun to go to the practice round.
Yes. It is a lot more fun.
I've done that.
The par three on a Wednesday is fantastic. And one of the reasons I like the Masters is because you see the same holes that you saw last year. You know that if it's a guy has a one-stroke lead, you start thinking in your mind, okay, he's got a chance at birdie at 15, 16 with a chance if that pins down low, but 17 and 18, he's probably going to par out.
I think that, for me, is the thing I like about the Masters, the only major played on the same course every year. So that's kind of cool. So I've only been one time. I went in 2011, and I was there for a practice round, and it was great. Got to walk the course, all these things. But the thing that I noticed
– what day was it?
Yeah, I think Tuesday.
I was there in 2011 on a Monday.
And it all runs together for me.
Yeah.
I'm reasonably sure it was the Tuesday. But so you walk around, you get to take it all in. I enjoyed that. But, you know, it was very hilly. That's the thing you don't appreciate from TV.
Oh, yeah.
Is how hilly that course is. And the thing that happened to me is I was actually hiding from my friends because we would walk up a hill and I'd have to get behind a tree and catch my breath. I remember saying, man, I'm about to die. And I remember the entire ride home just thinking, we may need to pull over. Well, it was about 5 days later when I had a heart attack. And so I could have been air-vacced out of Augusta. That would have added to the experience.
So what you're saying is walking the hills from
it's what put me over the edge.
That's what I was going to say, from 18 green down to 10 green and walking back up is what got you.
Yeah, it got me.
Well,
so what got our baseball team?
Well, I don't know. You know, in travel baseball, we put together a team last year. And the coach had put it together, great guy, good friend of mine. Hey, we got like two guys from Kosciuszko, got Sims from Winston County, a couple guys from Vicksburg, a couple guys from Greenville, kind of spread out, okay? We really didn't know each other. We got ready to play, and decent little team. And the guy was like, hey, we're not going to commit to anything past the fall. And the reason we're not going to commit to anything past the fall is this is either going to be the greatest thing that ever happened or it's going to be an epic disaster. And so that's kind of my feelings of this show today. It's either going to be a short show, one of the shortest shows we've ever had, or it's going to be the longest and most epic disaster show we could possibly think of. And before we start there, before we go into what happened, and I really don't even want to talk about what happened yesterday, before we start breaking down what happened Saturday in that, I guess you could say, debacle, let's remind you that you're listening to Monday Coffee, brought to you by our friends at Strange Brew Coffee House. Strange Brew with three locations. It all started here in Starkville on Spring Street and Highway 12. I've got the blueberry cobbler-flavored coffee this morning. I started my day the right way, going through the drive-thru at Strange Brew. A little bit different feel on a Monday than it is on a Sunday, but went through the drive-thru this morning, got my blueberry-flavored coffee. Go to strangebrewcoffeehouse.com. They'll ship that great coffee to you. And we're also brought to you by our friends at Nutrien Ag Solutions. They jumped on the show with us a couple weeks ago. And of course, Nutrien Ag Solutions, they bring you that great DynaGrow seed. If you're planting acreage over in the Delta, soybeans, corn, whatever the crop is this year, use DynaGrow seed. DynaGrow seed delivers innovative seed solutions to maximize your local acreage. For over 30 years, DynaGrow seed has worked with local growers to find the best seed solutions for your farm. Tested at research sites around the country and on growers' acres just like yours, you can be sure that your seed is or has a successful track record. And so book your seed today at your local Nutrien Ag Solutions or visit dynagrowseed.com to learn more. Bubba Morris, Jeff Tarsi, got a couple texts from Jeff yesterday after the ball game and texting with both those guys. Great Mississippi State people. And so if you're in the Mississippi Delta or over here in the Black Belt in eastern Mississippi, plant you some DynaGrow seed and get your seed from our good friends at Nutrien Ag Solutions. So, yeah, Charlie, that's my thoughts. It's either going to be really, really good or really, really bad.
All right, so now what you're about to do is tie this into Mississippi State baseball. You're going to go with the lineup changes. We're either going to be really good or really bad or
– No, I haven't thought that far ahead.
Okay.
No, I did not draw anything. It was – My thoughts on this weekend, I don't really have any good thoughts. It was just really, really bad. And so I'm just trying to figure out a way to not sound really, really bad.
All right, I have some thoughts. And here is what is perplexing to me.
Okay, and I'm going to start right. I'm going to stop you.
Okay.
Real quick. Here's where I feel like I am mentally right now. Is for a lot of people don't understand that when you and I began the podcast process, it was not out of left field in 2020. 2 years prior to that, in the fall of 2018, we decided, just on a whim one day, we had older equipment. I don't even know how, I don't even realize how we got up and going. And we recorded a show on Monday mornings called the Monday Cool Down. And it was the premise of 48 hours after the game of just relaxing.
After a football game.
After a football game. And the first time we ever did it was the game that Joe Moorhead and our team went to Kentucky and got just bullwhipped on a Saturday night. And then we start the show. It's like, man, this is – we got to have some way to mentally decompress from what we just watched. And that's kind of how I feel today. It's Monday. I've had another night's sleep after what happened Saturday. Yesterday was a blur. And then I feel like I'm trying to get into that Monday cool-down mode, but I can't. And so I'm needing you right now to provide me with some logic.
All right, so I'm going to cool you down a little bit.
Okay.
Do I need, like, some background music for this?
A little master's music?
Okay, number one, let's agree to accept this premise, that it's always easier to take the puzzle apart than to put it together, right? It's always easier to see things and how they should have been mapped out in hindsight.
Yeah, hindsight 2020.
All right. Friday night, you feel pretty good, right? Cal Steven was great. So right now, I think we can all agree, knock on wood, that this doesn't get changed later this week, that we've got a legitimate Friday starter in Cal Steven.
And I was thinking about that this weekend, too, and as I was trying to reflect, is the thing, you know, you start thinking about where are we better, and that's where we are better. we have a legitimate Friday night guy. Cal Steven was a Friday guy at Purdue. He had that slow start against Georgia Southern and then against LSU, and he kind of wondered how that would translate to later in the year. But he is a bona fide Friday guy.
So let's take a look at our two starters, Friday and Saturday. Cal Steven right now on the year has pitched in 8 games. He is 4-2. He has an ERA of 3.38. He has 47 strikeouts and just 12 walks. Has he made a difference? You bet. Because if we were to go back last year and find anybody who'd pitched over 30 innings, nobody is coming close to that ERA. Certainly nobody in a starting role. The only guys you were even seeing around 20 innings with ERAs in that level is like an Aaron Nixon, a guy coming out of the bullpen.
All right, can I be negative for a second?
Okay.
I hate to be negative about anything with Cal Steven. Anything with Cal Steven. Were you kind of surprised he didn't go out and pitch the ninth the other night?
In hindsight, you wish he had.
He threw 94 pitches. He had thrown 8 innings and given up no runs on 3 hits. And then, so here's the reason I say that. And, of course, you start talking about hindsight. Is we use Tyson Harden for an inning, and he threw 18 pitches. And so you used up a strike thrower out of your bullpen in an 8-0 game.
No, you would have liked him back.
Yeah.
I get that. On the other hand, one of the reasons you didn't have Nate Dohm starting that game, arguably, is because he went back out for one more inning you wish he hadn't earlier in this season, right? And you got to turn around, you got to play Auburn again in a week. And I think what it shows you, too, is maybe they just had decided they weren't going to be using Tyson Harden in a big moment later. That's all I can come up with.
Yeah, maybe so.
So right now you've got one good starter, and then you've got a second, Gerangelo. Gerangelo's been good this year. ERA's under 3.5. He's 5-1. And the guy, he's 61 strikeouts, just 19 walks. Opponents are hitting just 201 against him, hitting just 217 against Cal Steven. That's two really good guys. Now, what you didn't plan for, and as you like to say, things are sequential. Gerangelo not being able to go deeper in that ball game on Saturday changed everything.
And then something must not have been right, because Gerangelo, and what I mean by that is Gerangelo coming out after 3 innings, had thrown 54 pitches.
I'd heard he had some back tightness.
Yeah, giving up 3 runs on 4 hits. And so there had to have been something, because I didn't think – did I think he was great? Did I think he was as sharp as he had been? No, not at all. But
there's a value to just eating up some innings.
But there had to have been something there.
So, boy, you hope it's nothing that you can't get on a table and roll out, right? Because you're going to have him next weekend. But what I tell you is right now, you look at where are you. Those are two good things that you have going for you. Then you start to look around and you say, hey, what's going on? If Nate Dohm were pitching, you're a completely different team. Because yesterday you're rolling out Gerangelo instead of going the route that you had to go, which was through a lot of arms. But then there's still some question marks in the pitching staff. Look, our ERA last year was over 7 as a team. Right now our ERA is 4.15. There's been some clear improvements. Our strikeout-to-walk ratio last year was not good. It's a lot better this year. So there are things that you see there. Now here's the temper your excitement. Unless I've convinced you that our pitching is okay, things kind of unravel on you for a while after that. And I think right now there is a big old confidence void once you get past a couple of starting pitchers. Brooks Auger's pitching fine. No knock on Auger. But some of the guys are – it's getting a little tough. And what I wonder is when we sat down and we looked at this schedule as it was starting, we thought, man, this is going to be the toughest schedule. We'll be lucky to survive it. In hindsight, you know, working the puzzle backwards.
Yeah, Florida's not any good. Did we have false hope after we won 2 out of 3 against what is a bad LSU team? Did we have false hope of winning a game at Florida? I mean, we should have won all three, but Florida's not any good. And I say not any good. I mean, I think you can throw us, Florida, Georgia. There are several teams you can throw us all in a hat, and I think we're very similar. And this is not a knock, and I'm trying to separate what happened this weekend from it being Ole Miss, because I don't have a huge hatred for Ole Miss baseball. I don't. Now, I mean, when I look at other things, being a Mississippi State fan, now I want to beat them more than I want to beat anybody else. But I don't think what I'm saying is clouded by who we were playing. I'm looking at the numbers. Yeah, they've played the toughest schedule in the country coming into this weekend. Highest strength of schedule. But, Charlie, I think this is the – and I'm not. This is not me taking any shots whatsoever at our fine brethren to the north. But this is the worst product they've had on the field since Pat Harrison was a coach in Oxford. They're not good. This is a team who has had struggles offensively, complete struggles offensively. They hit 286 in the game on Saturday. You know what they hit yesterday in the game? They hit 471 in the game yesterday. They were 16 hits and 34 at-bats in the game yesterday. They hit 471. Conversely, and I know we're talking about our pitching right now, conversely, Ole Miss came into the weekend worst in the SEC and SEC-only ERA. And this is the second consecutive week we've had this situation. Georgia had an 8.8 last week. They left Starkville 12th. They moved up two spots. Ole Miss was 8.7, 8.8 going into this weekend. They leave. They lowered their SEC ERA by 3 this weekend. They're like 5.7. They moved up to 12th. And so, my goodness, man.
Hey, one thing, I do have to correct something I said earlier. I was talking about ERAs. I failed to account for this weekend. I was looking at my numbers from Friday. But the point remains, Cal Steven, an ERA now of 2.84. It's even better than I said. Opponents hitting just 2.01 against him. Gerangelo's goes up a little bit. He's at 3.8 rather. But the flavor of what I said stands, right?
Yeah, Cal Steven is a legit dude.
Yeah, Cal Steven is a guy, and you have to be happy with him. What else can I tell you to be happy about? Dakota Jordan's playing good. He's striking out too much, but he's – I mean, look, the guy's hitting 370 with 15 bombs. You'd take that, right?
When did the weekend change? When did it – we won 8 – and we said this going into the weekend, that Friday was going to be the big game. And if we could take their soul and take their spirit and win on Friday, that it would kill their spirit for the weekend. And we won 8-0, which was a spirit killer, to be honest with you. And then all of a sudden we roll out on Saturday. And to me, I'm trying to think of a nice way to put
this. It's got
to
be the 8th inning, doesn't it? Didn't that weekend change in the 8th inning when you were sitting here and you're up, what was it, 7-3?
I thought it changed before that. I did, and this is not me taking any kind of shots whatsoever, and I think you know what I'm about to say. We came up early in the game. We had first and third and one out. In that game, in that entire game, it wasn't – when it was 7-3, and here's my point. When it was 7-3 in the eighth, and that's what everybody's talking about, we had a 7-3 lead in the eighth inning, it should have been 10-3, right? It should have been 11-3, 12-3. Because our inability to score runs in that game when we had runners at third base and one out, what did you say? We struck out, what, 4 times with a runner at third and less than 2 outs, and those runs didn't score?
Yeah.
And I look back to the first time it happened. The first time it happened.
Second inning,
you got first and third. You got a guy on the ropes. He was big time on the ropes. And we're starting, you know, starting Spoleta in the DH spot. And this is not a knock at Spoleta at all. This is me sitting there looking at 10,000 feet, and you're putting a DH in the ball game who does not have many at-bats at all. And you're starting him on the road in the SEC against a rival. And, hey, we ain't even got to the point of a left-handed pitcher starting the game on the mound who is a power left-handed arm for Ole Miss. And so it comes up in that situation. Everybody could read the room. Strikeout happens. You get out of the inning. I thought that was really big. But I thought it changed by – I thought the weekend changed when he made the lineup card out for the game on Saturday.
All right, so let's walk through those situations. The first came in the second inning. You have first and third, one out. You get a strikeout looking and a ground out. Inning's over. You don't get the run home. Keep in mind, in 21, this was the thing we led the league in, was getting runners home from third with less than two outs. Then you go to the fifth inning. You get a hit by pitch, a walk. You get an error on a sacrifice. Now you get a single by Mershon. So now you got a run home, and you still got guys around the bases. Strikeout swinging, strikeout looking. Nobody comes home. Then again, in the seventh inning, you got runners on the bases, you got a guy at third, you got one out, and you go strikeout, fly out. And it goes back to just kind of the simple ability now and then just to put a ball in play. But in that ball game, we struck out a lot. Now, we struck out 16 times in that game. I get it, we played a few extras. But 16 strikeouts, it's not good.
Yeah, and I thought that, you know, the zone was a little bit different. You know, Amani struck out on a strike three late in the game, which was a little bit unfair. But I didn't think it was egregious. I mean, I thought Shulky got squeezed a little bit late in that game. I thought he got squeezed down. I didn't think Scott Klein called much down at the knees in that game, forcing Shulky to kind of throw up a little bit higher in the zone the next inning. And I'm not blaming what happened on Scott Klein's strike zone. I'm just saying that all of a sudden when Shulky has to throw it up in the zone and Ole Miss came up there hunting late in that game in the eighth inning, that kind of changed the complexity a little bit.
Well, and they certainly came up hunting because in the eighth, they came out swinging the bats.
They had eight pitches, five at-bats, four hits.
Yes, it goes bottom of the eighth, leadoff single on the first pitch. Then Ross doubles on a 1-2 pitch. Smithwick singles on the first pitch of the at-bat. Grounds out on a 1-0 pitch. Then Randall doubles on the first pitch. So it was a lot of ambushing early. And then Groff comes up and doubles on the second pitch that he sees against Davis.
Well, you mentioned Lyons right there, grounded out, and I'm all over the place. And that's what's so frustrating about that game is Ole Miss, even though you had so many opportunities at the plate, they try to give you so much. I mean, how many pass balls and wild pitches are we going to see in the Division I baseball game? You're not going to see many more than that at the 13U tournament down at Air Force Park down in Vicksburg or whatever they call it down there. I mean, it was bad. It was bad. They gave us a bunch. And then Leger, with that base running debacle that he tried on the ball down, and you throw him out at third base. And by the way, I don't think I've ever seen – that was a bad tag. Thank goodness he came off the bag. And so, Charlie, you're not doing a good job of calming me down right now, because the more I relive it, the more mad I get.
Well, that's just part of the way it is, man. Sometimes the meal don't taste good. Doesn't matter how many good reviews I give you, sometimes you just know it wasn't good. And I thought we missed a real opportunity. Then we had some chances to put it away, and I mean, we made some plays to, despite all these things we were talking about, to win the game, and then we just could not close it out. And that goes back to the back-end pitching thing. And what would you give for Mekhi Grant to be healthy right now? But everybody deals with that. So yeah. That's not an excuse at all. But
– yeah, the back-end pitching, Ole Miss was there for the taking to be knocked out completely.
And then what really bothers me is yesterday.
Well, I'm going to go – before we go to yesterday, and I think it needs to be talked about. And because you and I have been in here many times and talked about it, what the thing this team needs is a little bit of an edge. In the last 2 years, we talked about it when Luke Hancock got trucked at first base in the first game of 2022 by Long Beach State, and our guys stood around. We talked about the bat flip back toward the mound last year, and we let the guy just jog around the bases. Is this team doesn't have any edge. And Johnny Long, to his defense, has brought – a little bit of moxie behind the plate. And I was reminded of this. My uncle, Bill Wade, who was a superintendent of schools in Union, and he was a superintendent of schools in Louisville and passed away early this year. And I go by the Uncle Bill rule. And this is what he told me when I was a freshman going to East Central. And he was going to be 8 miles away in the Union, and I was going to Decatur. And he says, Bart, he said, here's my rule. He said, I'll bail you out of jail one time. That's it. I'm not doing it again. He said, I understand things happen at times. He says, I'll bail you out of jail one time, and that's what I'll do. He never had to bail me out of jail. Thank goodness I've never had been bailed out of jail in my life. But I thought about that the other night with Johnny Long, because last week when that debacle happened against Georgia, that was started buys something that Johnny did. Now, I'm not here sitting here taking sides on this deal. You had a coach and you had an athletic administration. You had a lot of people who were up late at night getting a lot of your buddies off the hook and allowing them to play on Sunday because of something that was started that shouldn't have started. Okay. And then all of a sudden you roll into Saturday night and you hit a home run. And I understand one of the emphasis that we talked about this before the season started, one of the emphasis they're going to have this year is the bat flips. Whether you agree with it or not, that's a point of emphasis. Mike Bianco comes out to argue, and here's the reason he came out to argue. Hawaii had a player tossed against Ole Miss in the opening weekend. Remember this? He bat flipped on a walk, and they tossed him out of the game. So, I mean, they've seen this play out before. I did not think he bat flipped toward their dugout, but when you throw the bat 10 feet in the air, that's one thing. And then when you step on home plate the way you did and have some words toward the dugout, I'm just saying, yeah, I understand the side of he brings the moxie, but it's one of those situations, too, of somebody's got to have the conversation. We bailed you out of jail one time. We ain't bailing you out again.
So I think what I would describe as this, because, look, we both defended him, and we've both been clear, I think, over the past week that we weren't upset about the thing at Georgia, right? And I'm still not. Well, what I'd say is I get it. It's the old George Karl thing, right? I want to have to coach my players back.
I want to rein them back in. I want you to go to the edge, and, boys, I'm going to bring you back, and I'm going to rein you back in.
Yeah, and so I'm not mad about it, and not mad about what we saw this weekend. The point that I would make about it, though, is this. Whether one agrees, and, man, you want to talk about hitting the generational divide in baseball is when you start talking about bat flips and stomping on the plate. Because I have friends who are good friends that are at complete opposite ends of the spectrum on this thing.
Oh, yeah, I am too.
I mean, and what's crazy is just fighting mad, you get the – and you get all this, the you're soft. I mean, just dumb stuff, right? Respect the game. You're so, here's the reality. Whether one enjoys bat flips or not, whether one enjoys targeting in football or not, there's still a rule book and an officiating – aspect that you have to be willing to understand. The thing that I would say is, as much as I think a lot of people in the social media world are getting too far into the flipping it at the dugout issue, because the way it was described to us before the season was, when in doubt, you're gone, right? It was not a, there was not a, hey, it's got to be blatant kind of thing. And we have seen, and we can go to YouTube, we can pull up a lot of videos. So the question of could he have been thrown out and did he do something wrong are very different things. And so all I'm saying is don't tempt it there. But it's a big home run, so I'm not mad about that. I thought the part, though, that was most likely to draw the ire was the end. And it kind of – if you were on the edge as an umpire about, okay, I'm probably going to let that go, then when you do that, it ends it. But here's the other thing I would say, and it's kind of beyond that. So it ultimately is, if that's going to be the game, you got to back it up. And I'm not saying Johnny Long can. I'm just saying that that's going to be one of the things to watch, right, is the degree to which we can back that up.
Yeah, you do have to back it up. And I thought, you know, Scott Klein, when he got the hot mic with Mike, and you see a lot of times how those conversations go. And it is now Scott Klein was saying, I warned him, and he did. Because the stomping of the plate to get thrown out for that.
You're not going to.
Would have required the teams to have had a warning before, an official warning before.
That's right.
That. Now, had he done that after an official warning, and you heard Scott telling Mike as the cussing tirade was going on, hey, I warned him. And he said, well, you're supposed to toss him. And what Bianco was saying is you're supposed to toss him for the bat flip and not what he happened at the plate.
And so one of the other issues, too, is whether you – he actually may have hit the perfect middle ground for not getting tossed, because one of the other things is not just whether you toss it at a dugout, but whether you are near a player. And so it's like the closer you are to home plate and the closer you are to first base, the closer you are to an opponent when you flip and that comes into play. Here's my final analysis of it. I thought that Bianco reacted the way I would want my coach to react. I thought, I want my guy, if somebody stomps on home plate, if somebody flips a bat, even in a big moment, I want my coach to, dang it, we're going to fight for us. And because there have been times over the years that I've been saying, I wish somebody would take a fastball to the ribs here, or I wish somebody would go get thrown out, and we haven't. So I have no problem with him acting the way he did, he should have. On the other hand, I think Scott Klein made the absolute right call by not ejecting anybody. In the end of the day, when you look at the moment, when you look at all that, it wasn't a big deal. The stomping on the plate by the rule deserved what it got, which is a warning. The bat flip, I do not like bat flips, but it wasn't, in the context of the game and the moment, a big deal. My biggest thing wasn't so much should you, shouldn't you. It's just understanding the situation and understanding that 7 days before, things got a little out of hand. Let's don't bail out twice here.
Let's be careful. That's what I'm saying. Be careful. But yeah. I tell you what, it injected some life into Ole Miss a little bit. Hey, let me ask you this question.
Well, 11 pitches and only one of them a strike injected some life into them too.
Yeah.
I mean, so let's – at the end of the day, what really made the difference, let's go back, and I'm not knocking anybody. You put somebody in a really tough position. But then when you go to the bottom of the 12th inning, 2-0 pitch, guy hit by pitch. That's three straight balls. Groff comes in, reaches on a fielder's choice on a 1-0. So now you got four balls, one strike. Fisher walks four straight pitches. Everybody moves up on a wild pitch. Then you get an intentional walk. Then Gatlin, ball, ball, ball. And this is now where I want to talk.
Well, okay, how many sliders in all those pitches you bring a guy in as a freshman in a tight situation and you want him to spin sliders, power sliders, all right? First of all, if you get those pitches up, a slider is a tough pitch to call a strike. And Ole Miss was up there taking, man. They're taking. And you're spinning sliders in the dirt.
All right, so Gatlin now, the situation with Gatlin, you got bases loaded. You have one out. And he gets ahead 3-0, and then we throw a strike.
Fastball.
Then he swings and misses on two.
Fastball.
Both of them.
Fastball.
All right, so now Ross comes up. He takes the first pitch strike. And then what?
He knows fastball's coming.
Yeah.
I mean, you've walked the bases loaded because you can't find a release point. This is not a knock at the pitcher. This is one of the few times that I kind of question the selection of what we're throwing. And so, to me, as a batter, and I said this before he hit it, Ross is up there knowing fastball is coming. What you have done, and we talked about Cal Steven against LSU, and the reason Cal Steven had the trouble against LSU is because LSU knew he couldn't locate slider. His slider was not working. He was a fastball-only pitcher. And at this level, if a batter at the plate knows you are a one-trick pony, and that's all you are right then, you got fastball only, he's sitting dead red. And that's what he did.
So that one hurt. No question about it. And then Sunday, you signed the no-compete clause.
Yeah. You know who's not a no-trick pony? Not a one-trick pony? That's our good friends at Cannon Forge. They don't just do one thing great. They sell cars. They sell new or used cars. But they also have multiple pitches in the repertoire. If you need the body shop, if you need the service center, they'll get you taken care of. Our good friends, Chris Keene and his great staff on Highway 182 just east of Starkville, they got a bigger selection now than they've had in a long time. You had the chip shortage. You had all the other things going on in the car world. But now you finally got a bunch of cars that you can choose from. And so deal with good people. And that's our good friends at Cannon Ford of Starkville. Hey, Super Bulldog weekend coming up this weekend. And I know this past weekend hurt. And you talk about signing the non-compete clause. We signed it in a magic marker in the game yesterday. We made sure that you could read it. We printed our name and then signed the non-compete yesterday. And so you better hope that that does not translate into the coming week. Now, we play a two-win Alcorn State team tomorrow. You and I have that broadcast. That should be a blast. Okay, I'm going to go there for just a second. Wait, remind me of Alcorn State.
This brings up a big point.
Yes, it does. And then we're going to Super Bulldog weekend, and this gives you an opportunity. It is first thing on a Monday morning. You got plenty of time. If you go today and go to maroonandco.com, they'll ship you that great merchandise. You'll have it ready for Super Bulldog weekend. Surely the goodness will get it to you that quick. But if you're coming to Startwell this weekend, go to Maroon & Company, the Cotton Mill Marketplace, right by Chick-fil-A, and get that great Bulldog gear for Super Bulldog weekend. You got football on Saturday, then baseball, then you got Auburn in here Friday, Saturday, Sunday, and baseball. So a big weekend. So go see our friends at Maroon & Company. Go to maroonandco.com. You can use the code NIL10. And they will give you a 10% discount. They'll send 5% back to the Bulldog Initiative, and that's our good friends at Maroon and Company. All right, we're playing Alcorn State tomorrow night. Early in the year, you and I have talked about ad nauseum about how bad of a schedule you played in the preseason. And one of the reasons that you play bad teams, low RPI teams, is to give a number of players ample opportunities. And I go back to what I said about Spoleta in the game on Saturday. Putting a guy in that situation, when you look at the number of at-bats he's had, it's not many at all. If you look at the number of bats that Michael O'Brien had coming into the weekend.
It was none.
And then you start him in the DH role yesterday. To me, one of the reasons that that stands out to me is those guys did not have opportunities to bat when you played some really bad teams early in the year. And you couldn't put away the bad teams. You were winning close games against bad teams. And so then you couldn't get Spoleta at bats. You couldn't get Michael O'Brien at bat. You couldn't get a lot of these guys at bats because you were in a dogfight with Mount St. Mary's. To me, that's the big thing that really stands out at this time of year when you have guys who are going through a tough spell at the plate and you're trying to find the right rotation, you're trying to find the right guys coming off the bench. You don't have a vast number of players who have great experience because you were in such tight games against bad teams early on. Am I wrong for saying that?
I think that's probably one of the few accurate things you said today, other than when you were talking nice about our friends at Cannon Ford. No, I think you're dead on. Look, I just think back to going and watching a lot of Tuesday baseball and knowing that by about the sixth inning, we were going to see some young guys. It's one of the reasons that in those games, I don't like a 10-run rule. Because I want to use the last three, four, or five innings to be able to get some of my young guys some at bats and not to feel like I'm either, one, having to fight to win it, or two, have to keep some of my older guys in so that they can try to get their numbers looking better. Because that's the other thing, right? When you feel like some guys are off to slow starts, you got to get them going. You don't want to take them out of the lineup. So I think there is a real advantage early in the season to playing some bad teams and beating them the way that you should, so that some of these young guys who, from all accounts, are going to be really good hitters and perform well in the fall aren't getting their first career at bat on the road against a rival. That's a tough spot to be in.
Yeah, it really is. And I go back to the point, I'm not blaming a kid in that situation. It's kind of like Nolan Stevens coming in and throwing sliders. And, let me tell you, I have been very pro what we've been able to do with our pitching staff because we have been very aggressive with fastballs, but not in that situation the other night. It was one of the very few situations this year I've looked and said, I really didn't like that pitch called at that particular time. Hey, we do have Super Bowl all weekend coming up this weekend. Had a lot of friends that did go to Oxford this past weekend and went to the baseball games. I saw a lot of Maroon at the ballpark Friday and Saturday. And actually had somebody send me a text the other day and says, Bart, I was trying to figure out where I want to go eat. And I thought about, what you said on the podcast on Friday about going to Taylor Grocery. They went to Taylor Grocery Friday night and had a bunch of catfish. I like eating the catfish at Taylor Grocery. And it's just south of Oxford in Taylor, Mississippi. And Coach Polk had to speak there Thursday night. He said, have you ever heard of Taylor, Mississippi? And I said, yeah, I went to Taylor Grocery all the time and had the catfish. And they get that great catfish from our friends at Heartland Catfish. Heartland producing the finest U.S. farm-raised catfish you can possibly want. And they serve it at great restaurants around the South. And one of the places they serve it is at Taylor Grocery in South Lafayette County. And also had my good friends at Country Pleasin'. They sent us a care package again, Charlie. I got to bring that to you. I got to bring you your half.
Are you serious?
I'll get it to you, all right? I got to figure out when to bring it.
Will you come here every day?
Well, I forgot this morning. I think they've sent us like three, and I brought one to you. I apologize for that because I just keep forgetting about it. It's what it is. But the three cheese, I had some three cheese yesterday, and our good friends at Country Pleasin' making the best sausages. I saw the Country Pleasin' sign behind the plate the other night, and that's one of the good things about our brethren to the north is they understand as we do. that country pleasing is the best sausage you could possibly have. And so it's made right here in the state of Mississippi, down in Florence. Country Meat Packers, they got the huge butcher shop down there, your place for your grilling items when you get ready to come up for Super Bulldog this weekend. You're going to put some stuff on the grill in the outfield. Stop by our good friends at Country Meat Packers and Country Pleasing Sausage. All right, Charlie.
I have a question for you before we break this thing up.
Okay.
First of all, I'm going to pull up the weather. Looking forward to Starkville here over the next several days, and I have a sports issue here. Projected right now as we look at the Weather Channel, tomorrow, Tuesday, 82 degrees is the high, just a 9% chance of rain. Got larger chances of rain later in the week, but we're talking 83 degrees on Friday, talking 75 on Saturday, a little cooler on Sunday, 61. But here is my question for you. We play, as you noted, an Alcorn State team that is not good.
Two wins.
Our RPI is kind of dangling right now into a dangerous level. Playing the game tomorrow only hurts you.
Yes.
And there is very little chance of rain. Do we need
turn
the sprinklers on?
I can get us a rain out.
What do we do? We have to play that game?
Yeah, and sooner or later you're going to have a heartfelt thought. And I like the thought process of playing in-state schools. I like the thought process of giving, you know, in-state schools the opportunity of coming and playing here. But sooner or later, when you start thinking about some of the teams that we play with RPIs that are going to be 305 and there's only, you know, 307th they rank, is this the best thing we can do? Should we think about doing this in the future? And we say this every single year. I hate being that guy, but it only hurts you.
And I don't know a way out of it now.
Oh, no, not for tomorrow. No, you got to play tomorrow. Here's the thing about this weekend. It's going to be hot weather. It's going to be sunny. And it's still like mid-April. And so a lot of people hadn't had the opportunity of getting outside yet. And so for the pale skin like me, you better load up on the SPF 100.
Let me ask you this. Do you pull your starters? Let's say, just hypothetically. Now, reality is we'll face some guy throwing about 47 and struggle to hit. But let's say that we go put up six runs in the first tomorrow. You want to pull everybody? Do you want to put Spoleta behind the plate? Do you want to put O'Brien in center? Do you want to do some things to – do you answer some of those questions? I mean, the thing that surprises me, we are apparently really struggling in our minds who our DH is. Because if you go back, so O'Brien starts the game Sunday. I'm not knocking that at all. As best I can tell, he wasn't on our active roster
last weekend
against Georgia. And the reason I say that is because when we put position players out on the field, I mean, he was sitting on the bench, which – as we've talked about, you've got guys who dress out but aren't eligible.
So I take from this past weekend, Aaron Downs may not have been on the 25. And we don't know the answers to this. We don't know this. But I would guess by you seeing the overflow of left-handed hitters against left-handed pitching that we did not have anybody on the bench get bat from the right side. All right. Charlie enjoyed it.
Well, we'll get back together later this week. We'll talk about Super Bulldog weekend. Butch Thompson is coming in, and
they're not playing well.
They're not. They're scuffling. Butch, all baseball, all records, all wanting to win aside, that's a good dude.
Yeah.
Enjoy visiting with him. But I'll tell you this about Butch. He's got a little Monroe County redneck in him.
Oh, yeah. He's going to want to come in here and do some damage.
And so we stomp on a plate against him.
Be wearing something, yeah.
Hey, no, I want to go back to this Johnny Long thing for one thing. I am not – nothing I've said today is negative against him. And I go back to this, what he – I agree with everyone who said that bat flip wasn't a big deal. All I'm saying is if I'm the coach, I think this is where I have the discussion with him, which is, hey, man, appreciate it. But these umpires this year are on a hair trigger when it comes to being ready to toss somebody because that was the point of emphasis. And like it or not, the same league office that had to stay up late talking about you last week is going to hear about you again. And I thought Peterson, those guys, I thought they overreacted.
Yeah, I thought that was complete overreaction.
Yeah, it was way too much. My point isn't at all that he should be kicked out. My point is, in today's world, he's lucky he wasn't. Does that make sense?
It does. And I'm going to say another hot-button topic right now, and you can disagree with this, and I'm probably going to have some really good friends who are going to disagree with me on this too. I thought yesterday's broadcast was the best one of the weekend.
I'm not going to disagree with you.
And that's all I'll say.
There you go.
All right, man. Hey, appreciate it. Appreciate you guys hanging out with us here on Monday Coffee.